This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be
good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already, it's Lee Miller. It's Friday. Them, the people tired working. Thank God we made it. 27 years ago, four BDF Marines were abducted by Honduran fishermen and kept hostages, if you will, for about 7 days at sea. 27 years ago, the Tribune reported that four Bahamian Defense Force Marines should soon be home after their disappearance on two arrested Honduran fishing vessels Saturday night. Prime Minister Hubert Ingham told the House of Assembly last evening that the arrangements will be made to have the men return to the Bahamas as the Honduran boats will arrive at their home port sometime today. Able Seaman Lorenzo Douglas Carey, 31. Able Mechanic Sean Roosevelt Rule, 28. Able Seaman Anthony Garfield Archer, 26. And Marine Mechanic Sullivan Benjamin McKinsey, 23, were escorting the impounded vessels, the Miss Lisa and the Morisco 1 from Dog Rock on the Keysile Banks to New Providence when the incident happened. Defense Force Patrol vessel HMBS Fort Montague arrested the boats on Friday afternoon following a search party's discovery of a large quantity of scale fish and crawfish on them. Mr. Carey and Mr. Roll were stationed on board the Miss Lisa, which had a crew of 56, while Mr. Archer and Mr. McKinsey were posted with the 71 members of the Morisco 1. The officers carried light automatic weapons. However, late Saturday, under cover of night, the Honduran vessels escaped the detection of the HMBS Fort Montague, said a government press release from the Bahamas Information Services. HMBS Fort Montague lost both visual and radio contact with the two boats at 8:30 p.m. Saturday, approximately 10 miles east of the Anguilla Keys on the Keysile Banks. All reports indicate that lights and communication on both Honduran vessels were cut as to evade the Fort Montague, which was sailing to the rear of the vessels, said the statement. Having released the officers' names earlier in yesterday's sitting of the House of Assembly, Mr. Ingham came back and announced that the Honduran government had been in contact with the Bahamas government. The Honduran Defense Force authorities reported that one of the boats made contact with home port to which the vessels were headed, he said. They reported that the four Defense Force officers are safe and unharmed, stated Mr. Ingham. Members banged on their desks on this announcement. Indications are that lights were turned off on the boats and our Defense Force officers were overpowered and that weapons taken by the Honduran fishermen. The Royal Bahamas Defense Force had also been in touch with a number of other countries since Saturday, and the Prime Minister expressed gratitude and appreciation to the government of Belize, Jamaica, Honduras, the United States, and Cuba. Diplomatic notes had been sent to Cuba and Honduras, and the Defense Force in Belize and Jamaica were asked to look out for the Miss Lisa and the Morisco 1. That is the story carried in the Tribune 27 years ago. He joined me sometime a week ago. He joins me now this morning. He is now retired Force Chief Petty Officer.
Yes.
Sean Rule, who was one of the persons abducted, one of the four abducted. Mr. Rule, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, sir. I'm okay. Thank you.
So when we last spoke about this story, you talked about the time that you spent at sea, the time around the Florida Keys, you imagine. We got to the point that the U.S. Coast Guard had pulled up. The U.S. Coast Guard pulled alongside. You thought that that this was your chance at being found and rescued. That didn't happen.
No.
What exactly stopped that from happening?
What had happened is when the Coast Guard pulled up on us, the crew of the Miss Lisa started to bathe on the deck. They took off their clothes and everyone got soap and water. They lathered up and water was splashing all over the place. In addition to that, when the Coast Guard tried to communicate with the captain of the Miss Lisa, you know, for some reason, he pretended as though he didn't understand, he couldn't hear, or he spoke some unknown language.
Mm-hmm.
So I think after a while, the Coast Guard may have gotten frustrated, especially with the men on the deck bathing.
Naked,
they,
you said?
And they wouldn't stop. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, they got undressed, they just started lathering and bathing. So after a while, they got, I believe, disappointed and they left, discouraged and they left. At this point, Kerry and I were very, very, very disappointed, very discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, you know, depression set in. Let me speak for myself.
Okay.
So I stopped eating.
Okay.
Okay, just before I stopped eating, let me just say that after the Coast Guard left us, our captors realized that, hey, these guys still in uniform. So they took our Defend Force uniform from us and gave us clothes that they were wearing.
Okay.
So now we look just like them. We, you know, there's no distinction.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stopped eating, it was because of depression mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the captain came, he said, listen, you got to eat. And what they fed us every day, but we were there. And one correction, we were out for 11 days, about 11 days we were away from home.
Okay.
And not 7 or 8, like I said last week.
Okay.
They fed us white rice and boiled banana every day.
White rice and boiled banana.
Yeah. They fed us because they didn't want to use the products that they caught.
In a boat full of crawfish.
In a boat full of crawfish. And fish.
Big grown man eating white rice and banana.
And boiled banana. Everyone ate that. Everybody on board ate that. They didn't want to dip into their profits.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. So now, after a while, I just stopped eating. I didn't eat for about 5 to 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And when the captain came and he said, listen, we need you to eat. Why are you not eating? I said, listen, I haven't seen Archer, I haven't seen McKenzie in 5, 6 days. They could be dead. I don't know where they are.
Right.
We haven't seen the Morisco one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was my defense for not eating.
Right.
But really, it was depression mostly.
Okay.
You know, now at this point, Kerry was not as depressed as I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kept a upbeat spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was counseling me because all this time I was counseling him. Now he counseling me,
right,
trying to get me to eat, trying to figure out why he's doing this. So he decided, okay, I can stay strong for the two of us. I'm going to eat, keep up my strength just in case.
Okay.
Which is what he did. So I said to the captain, listen, I'm not eating until I see McKenzie
and Archer.
And I see Archer.
Yeah.
I don't see them, I don't eat. Now by this time, we didn't know, but he already spoke with his country.
Mm-hmm.
And his country told him, Honduras told him, listen, if anything happened to these men,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a home to come to. You could never come back to Honduras.
Mm.
So make sure they're not hurt, they're not harmed. So if you give them a haircut and they didn't want it, you can't come back home.
Okay.
I mean, that's how serious it
was. So it was unlike the Flamingo incident. There was good diplomatic relations happening at this time.
Well, I don't know, but the diplomatic communication between Honduras and the Bahamas, but I was on the boat.
Prime Minister notes in the story in the Tribune that they spoke with Jamaica, Honduras, Cuba, and America.
Yeah, but we were on board the boat. We were not aware of this. Right, yeah. We wasn't aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing I could tell you is that the captain of the boat we were on,
mm-hmm.
his country somehow contacted him. He knew what was going on because of the contact in his country.
Okay.
Okay? So somehow he got communication out of Honduras
mm-hmm.
to him, saying, listen, these men are not to be harmed in any way,
mm-hmm.
not in the slightest way.
Mm-hmm.
Because he got this information, he tried to get me to eat. He did everything he could to get me to eat, and I refused to eat.
Okay.
So he got on the radio, and he called the Morisco One,
mm-hmm.
and they made arrangements to meet somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think by this time, he might have been in the Gulf of Mexico, heading towards Central America.
Okay.
So one day, because, you know, we already lost track of time.
Mm-hmm.
One day, Kerry said, roll, listen, Morisco One. So I'm laying on the bridge, on the deck of the bridge,
mm-hmm.
and I'm saying, you know, I'm weak and I'm tired. They said, you see McKenzie, you see Archer? So he looky. He said, yes, I see them. So the captain come running and he say, Mr. Rule, your men are here. See, they're alive. They're safe. Please eat something. Mm. Okay, so I saw a marcher. I said, you all okay? They said, yeah, we okay. You all okay? I said, yes, we okay. So the first time in almost a week.
You had some white rice and some banana.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When I got up to speak to Archer and McKenzie, mm-hmm. the clothes, the pants they put on me dropped straight to my ankle. That's how much weight I'd lost. Mm. So it went from my waist straight to the ground. Mm-hmm. I became very small.
It's like because, 8 days, 9 days.
Yeah, I didn't eat. Yeah, I wasn't eating.
Okay.
I was on a hunger strike. And my pants fell from my waist straight to my ankle.
So tell us about you're in possibly the waters heading towards Honduras now,
yes.
right?
Yes.
You begin to see Honduras. When do you realize that you are approaching Honduras? Are you able to tell from the land mass, or how do you know that, boy, this ain't home? What gives you that indication that we are now approaching a foreign land?
Okay. Here's what happened. Now, don't forget, I told you we were in the wheelhouse, in the bridge,
sure.
for most of the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All of the trip. And we were, because the Coast Guard boat pulled up on us some days earlier, we had guards on by us with knives, okay?
Okay.
Now, two significant things. When the Morisco 1 pulled up on the Miss Lisa, they took some of the people off. They like traded crew.
Okay.
For some reason, we didn't know what was happening, but we learned later what was happening. Now, I told you on board last week, we had a guy they call a guerrilla. He was supposed to be familiar with guerrilla warfare and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
We had to drop him and some of the people to Guatemala.
Okay.
And some of the people who came off the vessel with us and went on to Morisco 1, they took some of the people to Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we had people, the crew was made up of Nicaraguans, Hondurans, and Guatemalans.
Okay,
so they had to go to these three countries. They'll go to two countries before they went home. So the Morisco 1, I believe, went to Nicaragua, and the Miss Lisa went to Guatemala. Then we went to Honduras.
Okay.
Well, you know, from the minute we woke up that Sunday morning, and we were not on board the Monarchy, and we could see the signs of the Florida Key. We know, hey, that's it for us. We're not heading back home, at least not right now.
Okay.
But we knew we were close to Honduras when we pulled up to Guatemala and let some of the Indians off,
mm-hmm.
the Guatemalan guerrilla off.
And there was still no sight at all ever of the Monarchy. Never ever. No, from you lost sight of it, you never saw it again.
No, that was it.
No radio comms, nothing.
No. They took our weapons, they took our radio, they took our uniforms. Okay.
At what point do you realize that you're deep in it though? Like at what point do you say to yourself, well, okay, this is it?
Reality really, 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 really set in when the Coast Guard vessel pulled off from us and didn't take us off.
Yeah.
Everything changed after that. You know? We had some hope. Before that,
right.
I was encouraging. I was never, to be honest with you, I was never ever afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But depression did set in with
after
me
the Coast Guard.
After the Coast Guard vessel just pulled off and left us, man.
Yeah.
Because as far as we were concerned, that was our last hope. So now we ready, start formalizing a plan to, hey, we either got to jump off this boat and swim, or we got to jump on the land
and that would
and
be
run.
To your peril.
Yeah, more than likely it would have been.
Yeah.
You know, but when we got to Guatemala, they kept us low. I can't tell you how the place looked. I know when I did get the peep up, I saw a lot of trees. It was like a jungle.
Okay.
But other than that, I can't tell you anything else because they kept us sitting on the floor of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't get up. Okay. They didn't allow
but
us
unharmed,
to get up and look around.
Unharmed, though.
Yeah, we were unharmed. We were free to move if we wanted to. We did at some points, we just couldn't come out of the bridge,
mm-hmm.
out of the wheelhouse. We couldn't move. Now, when the boat was at sea, let's say we were in the Gulf of Mexico or wherever, they allowed us to walk around. I walked around. I spoke with some of the crew who could speak English, you know, ran back into the bridge.
Okay.
When we were back in the bridge, everybody was happy. Everything was quiet, you know?
Okay.
But other than that...
You make it to Honduras. You get to Honduras. You're aware now that the captain of the vessel, the Morisco 1, or the Miss Lisa, sorry.
Yes.
The captain of the Miss Lisa has been given strict instructions.
From his country, yes.
Not to touch these defense force marines.
Yes, in no way.
You get into Honduras. how do you know what's happening now? Because you have no clue what's going on in Nassau.
Right.
You haven't spoken to anybody in Nassau.
No.
Cell phones don't exist. This is 1984.
Okay.
Text messages don't exist. This is 1984.
True.
You've made absolutely no communication at all with any Bahamian in the last 11 days other than Kiri.
Okay.
Yes. You're in Honduras. How do you know what are the next steps?
Okay. Great. Great question. Let me say before I answer you quickly is that before we got to Honduras, we had a radio communication with some official. At the time, I didn't know who it was. Yes, Bahamian. Okay. I didn't know who it was.
Uh-huh.
But later, I found out it was Mr. Carlton, right from Foreign Affairs.
Okay.
Okay? And he was asking, that's how come the Prime Minister could say in the House that we were okay.
Okay.
Because Mr. Carlton, right, spoke with us. And he confirmed that we are who we are.
Mm-hmm.
He asked us certain questions, and we gave him the answers. He said, okay, well, this must be Sean Rule. And he communicated with the Bahamian government and said, okay, he spoke with us, we are okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that's the only thing that happened before we got to Honduras. Now, when we pulled up to the dock in Guanaja, the island off Honduras, we were met by... A military officer from Honduras.
Okay.
He spoke reasonably good English. He gave us his name. He said, listen, I am I'm Commander so-and-so from the military. The man who brought you here are under arrest. He said, what I want you to do right now is try to, you know, compose yourself, get your thoughts together. We're going to take you to get a report from you, and then we're going to go to court.
Did you see them cart it off? Did you actually physically watch the Honduran
fishermen? Okay, when we came off the boat, the military and police took Kiri and I off the boat. They took us off the boat, and we went into, I guess it's a jailhouse.
Okay.
Right next to the court.
Okay.
We went there, and the gentleman said, listen, I think one gentleman was there who could speak English.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm going to take your statements. Speak slowly, speak clearly. I may ask you to repeat some things. And he wrote down what we said. We said, you know, we had these men arrested for illegal fishing in the Bahamas. And we tried to tell the story what happened, how we got there. So they wrote down as much as they could. And from there, we went to court.
Okay.
Okay, when we went to court, the captain of the Morisco One was there. And the captain of the Miss Lisa was there. And let me tell you, most of it I didn't understand what was going on. They spoke
Spanish.
Mostly in Spanish, yes. The gentleman beside us was trying to translate, but that was beyond him. Okay? So at the end of the day, the military officer said, listen, these men are going to be put in jail, and we'll communicate with your government right now. Let's get you to the capital, Tegucigalpa.
Tegucigalpa.
Yeah, so we went to the airport.
You see how I practiced the name, Tegucigalpa?
Yeah. Very good, very good. They took us to the airport. We jumped on an airplane, a regular airplane. It must have been some commercial flight.
Okay.
And we flew.
So you were with other people on the plane?
From what I remember, there was only the military officer, Kiri, and myself. But they probably took everyone off that flight.
So where were Archer and McKenzie?
I apologize. Archer and McKenzie were there. When we landed in Honduras, the Morisco One was there. Ms. Lisa was there. They took the four of us off. Kiri and I, Archer and McKenzie. We all went to this police station. We gave four statements. We went to court.
Did you go to court the same day?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's swift.
We get from the jailhouse straight to the court.
Yeah, that's...
All this happened in like 2 hours, maybe three talks.
Swift justice.
Yeah.
Okay.
We went straight from the jailhouse straight to court. And the gentleman asked us to speak. We spoke individually. And this gentleman was translated for the judge.
Okay.
Like I said, most everything was in Spanish.
Okay.
Okay. Very little of it I could understand.
Okay.
So,
you're on the plane.
Yeah, now we're on the plane to the Tegucigalpa, to the capital. So the military gentleman is with us. We gone on the transportation, and they took us to a hotel, a small hotel, you know, nothing significant about it.
Yeah.
So he said, well, get yourself cleaned up. We in our uniforms now, because they gave us back our uniforms before we went to the jailhouse, before we went to court. We're in our uniforms, and So I said to him, I said, hey, where are the weapons? He said, don't worry about the weapons. The weapons are, everything is straight.
Mm.
So we went to, he took us to a very nice restaurant, a place that was already dressed up and organized for us.
Okay.
And we were the only four people there, five people. The military officer was there and the four of us.
Okay.
There was food. I mean, there was chicken. There was ham. There was just food galore, drinks
mm-hmm.
galore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said, these the gentlemen say, sit down, eat, eat all you could eat. Eat as much as you could eat. Take your time. No rush. Just eat. Drink whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You could have beer, wine, water, soda, whatever. Okay. So we sat there. We spoke, the four of us among ourselves. And
Did Archer those ever bring you up to speed about what they
asked? Oh, yes. This uh-huh. was the time when we spoke.
Okay.
And Archer said, listen, man. He said, on our vessel, mm-hmm. Marisco One, them fellas, because, you know, Archer was the biggest.
He was big. He's the biggest
person
yeah.
Out of the four of us.
Yeah, he's a big,
and I was
strong,
the smallest, the tiniest, yeah. yes. So he said, because of my size, they held, two men held him,
yeah.
and they held a cutlass to his throat for the entire time they were on the boat.
The entire 9 days.
The entire time, the entire yeah. 11 days
yeah.
we were out to sea.
Okay.
We were away from home. They held a cutlass
Archer's
to his
about neck. 5'11",
yes.
270 pounds
yeah. Archer, of Archer's torque. A big guy, yeah. yes. 5'11" in Archer, but 6 feet, maybe yeah. 6 feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of torque.
Yes.
And that's torque with
he
a
was muscular. Yeah, he was yeah. muscular. He wasn't, yeah. you know, he was no fat at the time.
Yeah.
We were quite young and fit.
Mm-hmm.
So he they held the cutlass to his neck all those days.
The entire trip.
Yes. I said, but they held us down when the Coast Guard came. He said, the Coast Guard came to you. And, you know, we spoke. Mm-hmm. They gave us some insight on what happened on their boat. We gave them some insight what happened on our vessel. But we were all safe and mm-hmm. healthy. Now, one thing we learned, like I told you earlier, the captain said, listen, we were informed that nothing should happen to you. So,
okay.
So another thing we learned is that they were actually afraid of us. With Archer and his size,
mm-hmm.
they were afraid of him because
71 fellas was afraid of Archer.
Yeah, I'm telling you, okay. Believe you me.
Mm.
Because on my boat, the Miss Lisa one, when this so-called gorilla tried to shoot me with the weapon and the weapon didn't go off and I tackled him, I dashed him to the ground and took his weapon, they probably called the Marisco one and say, listen, the smallest man is the most dangerous man, so look out for that big fella you all got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were really afraid of us. In reality, they were afraid of any military people,
sure.
you know. So they thought we were well-trained and we were, you know, we could just kill them all, but in reality,
that didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Couldn't
so
happen.
So you're having lunch now. How long before
it's
you...
dinner now.
Dinner. Dinner. How long before you are taken to the airport to be transported to New Providence?
Okay, the
military... And are you allowed to make contact with your family here in Nassau?
Okay, the military gentleman told us, listen, tomorrow morning, you will meet your Bahamian official, who was mm-hmm. Mr. Carlton Wright. Then we met another government official, and then we went... to the airport men home. That's just how we said it. That's just how it happened. At that time, no. We made no phone calls, no communication with our families at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Carlton Wright, if he made any communications, he did it.
Yeah.
And he did it, I guess, when he was in his room or in some official Honduras.
He was in Honduras.
Yeah, he was in Honduras. Okay. He met us in Honduras. Yes, okay. He did. In Tegucigalpa, he okay. was right there.
Okay.
And he met us there. And the next morning... he bought us some clothes. Our family sent us the change of clothes. The clothes I'll be wearing in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
You see us.
Y'all were very spiffily dressed, by the way. I might
you
add.
Think so?
Y'all didn't look like prisoners of war. Y'all look. Yeah, y'all look like y'all come from
yeah,
the club.
We tried to get some reasonable good clothes, you know.
Okay.
But the good thing is yeah, like you say, we were dressed okay, not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
We had our shoes. We were not well shaven in 2 weeks. So they sent toothbrushes and your deodorant and everything. All those little things
sure.
came.
Sure.
So when we went back to the hotel, which was evening, by the way, mm-hmm. after we ate,
mm-hmm.
we showered, we changed, we had, you know, clean underwear. And by the way, before someone asks a question, call in and ask, in those 11 days, they asked, did we bathe? Yes, this is how we bathe. Whenever it rained, and I mean, there was torrential rain,
mm-hmm.
whenever it rained...
They put y'all on the deck.
We went outside with our soap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we bathe.
Okay. Okay. So you're on the plane on the way back to Nassau now. Who is on the plane with you headed home?
Okay. Now, the best of my memory now. When we were coming back, there was a government official. I believe it was Mr. Carlton, right? I'm not sure.
You're on a jet. Do you even
know? Yeah, we came back on a
jet. Do
you even
know whose jet this is?
No. They told us, the pilot and co-pilot were very friendly, as well as a government official.
Do you remember their names?
Mr. Wright. No, I can't tell you their names.
Okay.
The gentleman said good day. They greeted us. They were very nice about it. And they said, listen, a resident in Lyford Key communicated with the Prime Minister, mm-hmm. who was the Honorable Hubert Alexander Ingram mm-hmm. at the time. Said, and he offered to send his jet to Honduras and bring us back home.
Okay.
Which was very nice, and we were very happy about it. And we said, okay, we'll tell your employer, thank you for us. Mm-hmm. Okay, and hopefully you will get to see the Prime Minister and tell him, thank you. So we flew home, and they were in communication with Nassau International Airport, obviously. And they said, listen, guys, we got to be to the airport in 20 minutes. We're ready to fly in about 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we asked him, you know, how there's a Learjet. The Learjet was very nice. It was full of sandwiches and fruits for us, mm-hmm. Water and some soft drink. And we took advantage of that.
Okay.
Because we hadn't eaten from the night before.
Okay.
We ate some sandwiches. We ate some fruit, drank some water. He said, listen, guys, it's a Learjet. We could go X amount of miles an hour. And the captain was just showing off and go. He said, you know what? I'll have you guys on the ground in 20 minutes. So he pushed the trolley forward and in 20 minutes, we were in Nassau.
Okay.
You know, from
you get on the ground. You're on the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is your feeling? Is it one of disbelief or is it one of absolute relief? Like, is it oh my God, I'm finally here, or is it wow, Nassau?
Yeah, we talked about that on the plane, mm-hmm. and I just said, listen, the minute I walk off this plane on in Nassau, mm-hmm. I'm gonna bend down and kiss the ground. Mm-hmm. He said that, you know. Mm-hmm.
I know it's kind of an emotional period for you. I get that. If you're just tuning in, I have with me Mr. Sean Rowell, retired Force Chief Petty Officer. We're recounting the incident of 1994, where four Defense Force Marines were abducted by Honduran fishermen and taken into Honduras. And he's now recounting the time, what happened, who all was there, how did it happen. I'm going to open the phone lines because I feel like you people may have some questions. This is a text message here, Mr. Rowland says, I used to be a crew member on the HMBS Fort Montague. Her radar was good for up to 20 miles. Darkness and loss of radio should mean nothing. But I think if you followed the story, you would remember that he had recalled that before that very patrol, the Montague had some radar issues. And that the CO didn't want to take it out because of those radar issues. But they, you know, they did what we do. They went. And regrettably, that translated into the Montague incident. So 323-622-3232-54-316-325-4259. You can give me a call. You may have some questions that I may not have. I'm going to let him finish with the story and see if we can get through it. You're on the ground in Nassau. You have this wonderful private citizen that has sent a wonderful Learjet for you, yeah, according mm-hmm. to you. Archer is now on the ground.
Yeah, we're on the ground.
He's happy to be home.
Oh, yeah.
What feeling do you have?
Oh, I was happy to be home. The Defense Force, Bond was there. They had...
Did they play Junkanoo?
On the guard. I'll be honest with you. I don't even remember.
You can't remember
they had Junkanoo. I don't remember. When I walked in the airport...
You couldn't hear any of that.
My daughter was there. Mm-hmm. I saw my aunt, Gloria Dorsett, was there. Mm-hmm. My mother was there, my father was there, my wife was there, my in-laws were there. I was just happy to be home, and I was happy to see them. Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter at the time, she was two, Deshaun, she grabbed my neck and didn't let go. Mm-hmm. You know, she was happy to see me. I don't think she actually realized what was going on at that time, but you know, she put a bear hug on me and didn't let go. So I was just happy to be home. Everyone was crying, you know, parents, aunts, in-laws, everybody. It was a joyous time to be after being away from home for about 11 days, held captive, you know. And to this day, you know, when I was in Exuma as a little boy, I could eat a boiled banana. Mm-hmm. You know, after that kidnapping, Mister, I don't want to see banana. Whether it boil or not, you know. But yeah. It was rough. But I was happy to be home.
Yeah.
I was very happy to be home. It was quite emotional. It was an experience I don't wish to ever have again.
The NASA Guardian reported that they didn't let you all speak to anybody at the airport. They whisked you all away.
This is true.
And because they whisked you all away, basically no one had heard anything from you all until before you came back from Coral Harbor Base. Okay. Reverend Ivan Butler would have met you all at the airport as well. I was actually supposed to speak to Reverend Butler. Regrettably, this week has turned out to be something completely different. Uh-huh. But we'll get him in because I want to get his account of what went down. But what exactly is the mood as you're being transported to Coral Harbor?
Okay.
Your Commodore is there.
Yes.
The Minister of National Security, the Honorable Orville Turnquest is there. He gives a little speech. Ivan Butler says a little prayer. And then they put you all in a bus, I understand, and shoot you all to Coral Harbor. What is happening there?
Okay, so while we're mingling with family and friends, I think at the time it was, I believe he was a leading hang at the time. Ralph McKinney came and whispered in my ears and said, he grabbed me by the shirt. He said, we have to go now. We need to go to Coral Harbor right now.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me. So he grabbed the four of us and we went outside and they put us in a vehicle. Took us to Coral Harbor Base. When we got there, they said, listen, okay, we have to do a debriefing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Commodore, L.L. Smith, was there. He spoke with us. He said, you know, he was happy that we were back. We were alive. You know, it's been a long ordeal. He asked us if we were okay. Are you safe? Did they harm you in any way?
Mm-hmm.
Did they strike you? Did they beat you all? No was answered because none of that happened.
Okay.
Thank God. And he said, how are you feeling medically? You know, are you sick? Are you dizzy? He said, no, but still, he said, you know, I need you all to go to sick bay. They're going to give you all a checkup and give you some antibiotics. You know, when you go to certain parts of the world, you need certain medications or certain vaccines, etc. We went to sick bay. We got a mantle. We got tablets. We got a lot of stuff. And they spoke with us.
You also said that they told you all not to have excessive interaction with your family because of the travel.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, where they asked, you know, we may have had some sickness or disease, picked up something, especially with being on a boat with these
foreign people.
But
that's interesting.
Limit your interaction.
But that's interesting because I've been out to sea, stuck out to sea 11 days, God knows where, doing God knows what.
Yeah.
The only people in life that I actually love, I finally get an opportunity to see them right after I have a near-death experience and you tell me,
because we've
not
been to a foreign country,
we know
there are various diseases in certain countries, et cetera, et cetera.
But did that do anything to you mentally? Like when they say to you, oh, you know, Sean, don't try to avoid your mommy, try to avoid your wife. Did you think to yourself, man, y'all people got to be crazy?
No, at the time, really, I didn't think. The medical doctor at the time, I think that was Dr. Francis Sanders. He said, listen, you know, he explained the importance of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're running tests. We're giving you antibiotics. We're doing this. We're doing that. We couldn't take any chances. Just like this COVID virus today, you know, you don't need to take any unnecessary chances because we don't know what happened to you guys. We don't know what you picked. We don't know what happened on the boat. We don't know what these people, because the main reason is because when we arrested those boats and I searched the Miss Lisa, I remember I told you last week there was a gentleman in the boat who did not move. He couldn't move.
Right.
We don't know what his ailment was. Some people were saying it may have been the bends.
The bends.
He came up out of the water too quickly. We don't know if it's malaria or some other disease.
Mm.
But I came into contact with that gentleman.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So we couldn't take any chances. So it was almost like quarantine for a while to make sure that, hey, everything was okay. I didn't feel anything about it because I was in quarantine before when I worked with illegal immigrants in Nicaragua.
Okay.
Yeah, I was quarantined for 2 weeks, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a question. You talked about the prime minister and you talked about how the private citizen that had sent the plane had done so because of the prime minister's asking and that the plane had found its way to Honduras and brought you back here. This is the Learjet with the sandwiches on board.
Yes.
And do you ever hear from the prime minister? Does the prime minister ever request an audience with you? I know that if you draw the stories comparably, you know that there is a ceremony at Ross at Clifford Park for the Flamingo. Mm-hmm. You know that they did a bit of a medal presentation.
Yeah.
So you all didn't get medals. Did you ever see the Minister of National Security after that, or did you ever see the Prime Minister Did you ever even get any communication from the Prime Minister after
that? Question, yes. When we came back, we spoke maybe a week later, I know, a few days later, I can't be sure of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Minister, the Honorable Hubert Ingraham, did send for us. We, mm-hmm. we had an audience with him, the four of us.
Okay.
Okay, if I remember correctly, there were six people in the room. There was the Prime Minister, the four of us, the Marines, mm-hmm. and someone who took some notes or some minutes.
Mm. Do you recall that person being Mr. Reed, probably, Idris Reed?
No, I can't. Because
I think he would have also been at the airport.
I can't tell you who the person, I can't remember, honestly.
Okay, sure.
Someone was there and they took some notes. And the Prime Minister, the Honorable Hubert Ingraham, was quite hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's quite nice and friendly. Gave us some
more
jokes,
sandwiches?
Some jokes. No. We didn't get any sandwiches. He did make a joke along those lines, but no.
Okay.
We didn't get any sandwiches.
Okay.
He said, you know, what can I do for you guys? What would you like to see, et cetera, et cetera. We told them. Now, before we went to see the Prime Minister, let me just say that the four of us got together.
Mm-hmm.
We made Archer the spokesperson.
Okay.
We came together with our ideas, you know, because we thought, we were wondering if the Prime Minister sent for us, he may ask us, you know, what can I do for you? And exactly, he did exactly as we mm-hmm. thought, you know. So we came up with something. We said, okay, Mr. Prime Minister, we'd like to probably be given this, be given this, and be given this.
Mm-hmm.
We told him that, okay? And the meeting was over, had ended,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't hear from the Prime Minister.
Were you escorted by the Commander of Defense Force?
No, it's just the four of us.
Okay.
From my recollection.
No chief staff officer. The Coral Harbor Base sent you four Marines, the seniorest one being an able hand with 8 years, and sent mm-hmm. you all to meet the Prime Minister without any senior officer?
But I can remember Mr. Miller, there were only the four of us, huh. and we went to see the Prime Minister.
That's not the way they do it now.
I cannot tell you that it went officially through Coral Harbor. I don't know that.
No?
I was at home. They said, don't forget now, when we came back, my boss at that time, my immediate boss was the CEO of Monaco, because I was a part of Monaco crew.
Lieutenant Commander Fowler. He was Lieutenant then.
I was a part of our Monaco crew as electrician.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after Lieutenant Fowler, my boss was at the time Lieutenant Commander Davy Roll, who was the BEO, Base Engineering Officer.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, my engineers, who was Sean Roll and Sullivan McKenzie, say, you guys stay home, take it easy, relax, mm-hmm. you know. So we were home when we got this call.
Right, because you also had the quarantine period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We got this call, say, listen, man, you got to see the Prime Minister. You got to go to the Prime. I can't even tell you how I got to the Prime Minister's office. I don't even remember. I know we went there and we spoke with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke with us. It was a very pleasant meeting.
Sure.
I must say.
Okay, you got a minister's commendation, though.
Yes.
Okay.
Let me just say, after this, because we were so affected by the kidnapping,
mm-hmm.
including myself.
Mm-hmm.
We were so affected by it mentally. I was seconded to Ministry of Works for 2 years, 1995 to 97.
Okay.
My last trip.
Did you ever tell anybody, like when you went to Ministry of Works, did you ever make any of those people there aware that?
Some people knew who I was.
Okay.
And they knew the story. And they said, oh, this is one of the Marines who got kidnapped. They knew a lot of people knew about it around that time.
Okay.
You know, who tuned into the news, et cetera.
Mm.
So I was there, and while I was at work one day, I got a call saying, listen, you got to come to, I think they say Government House, we giving you a medal. I said, you giving me a medal? I said, yeah, you getting the minister's commendation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which isn't a medal.
No, it isn't a medal. So I said, when is this? They say, tonight. So I was already at work. I don't think I had a direct ride uptown. So I missed the ceremony at Government House.
Mm-hmm.
So a day or two later, leading seaman Ralph McKinney brought me this little yellow thing and said, mm-hmm. this is your commendation from the minister.
Mm-hmm.
I say, what is this?
Yeah, it's a ribbon.
He said, remember I told you you were getting a medal?
Right.
I said, but this isn't a medal.
Right.
He said, no, it's not really a medal, it's a ribbon. So I got a ribbon and it could only be worn on your
tools.
Number twos, your short sleeve white
your
uniform.
Ceremonial tools, yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's no what I can't wear it to church or my suit. So I said, this is what I got. I said, what is this for?
Would you have liked a medal?
A medal is no problem. I mean,
and the reason I ask is because a lot of the way you measure the life and time of a man in service
yes.
is by the decorations he
True.
Wears. You're able to tell so many things about him.
Yes.
by the way, like if he has a medal of inauguration, you know he was here from day one.
Yes.
If he has a CARICOM medal, you know that he was the man that has deployed in peacekeeping efforts. If he has a, what's that medal? The funny rainbow one that they gave them for going to Trinidad with Obama.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I
then you know that the man has deployed in efforts alongside U.S. forces.
True.
If he has a Purple Heart, then you know he's had traumatic service, which I think you all should have been given. I don't think you have to die to get a Purple Heart.
I don't know.
Well, the people that lived on the Flamingo all have Purple Hearts.
Okay.
It's traumatic service.
Yes.
So I mean, do you think that it would have offered your time and service a little more value to?
I believe so. I think it would have been more valuable than a ribbon.
Than the commendation.
Yes, than the commendation.
Yeah. The commendation don't really count until you get coupled, right? Like if you get
you get
because
a
for every medal ribbon. You get, you get a ribbon to match your medal.
Exactly.
A commendation doesn't come with a medal, so it don't really have no color. It's either yellow or green, depending on who you get it from.
Right.
And unless you got like 2-3 medals to put your commendation on the side of or above or beneath, depending on the seniority, then technically you got like a little yellow blip on your uniform.
Basically. Yeah. One blip on your uniform.
A blip,
on your chest. Yeah. Looks like a mustard stain.
We're going to a break. Don't move. I've got with me retired Force Chief Petty Officer Sean Roll. He is one of the abducted Marines from 1994, 27 years ago. And since we playing with, you know, with number Obear, you know, like calling an election on the date of the anniversary of the FNM and things like that. 27 might actually mean something to you, so we don't know. Make some decisions based on that. Don't move, though. I've got Sean Rowland, more of the story on the next side of the break.
It is never easy to witness nature's wrath. One single named path of destruction over the course of a few hours, sometimes minutes, sometimes seconds, can change your life forever. When a hurricane strikes, be prepared. Let the insurance professionals at J.S. Johnson protect you, your property, and the ones you love. Be prepared. Visit the insurance experts at jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Hey, did you find the show interesting? Do you want to be a part of the conversation? Well, sponsor Unleashed today. Call 302-2304 or 302-2375 to see which package is right for you. Join Lavon Miller as he ignites the passion of the next generation by bridging the gap with engaging conversations and innovative ideas. Take action and sponsor Unleashed today at 302-2304 or 302-2375 and be unleashed.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for staying with me. It's Levin Miller. It's 96.9 FM. I'm joined with retired Force Chief Petty Officer Sean Rule. He is with me. I want to give you an opportunity to talk to him, though, because I know the story. You may have some questions that I do not have. You may want to know some things that I do not know. So don't wait until he leaves here because I won't be able to answer them. You can text me on 422-4796. You can call me on 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Where were you? Could you even remember where were you? Not you, Mr. Rule. I'm talking to people that are listening to me in the radio world. Do you even recall the incidents of August 1994? Where were you when you heard of the abduction? That's also something I'd like to ask you out there if you're listening to me. Did you at any point become concerned for our boys? Did it cause a level of national galvanizing? Did we come together as people and kind of firm up our support for nationhood? When we found out that our boys were missing and lost at sea, and for 11 days, that's literally almost a month, right? Fear must have been setting in, uncertainty must have been setting in, and for whatever it is worth, all right, the most traumatic incident in the history of this country still remains the HMBS Flamingo. And I want to also again say now that I wish that when y'all put Eddie Hanna face on the front of the $100 bill, y'all put a replica of the Flamingo on the back of the $100 bill, or better yet, put that wonderful picture of the crew on the back of the $100 bill, and we could change the colloquial name from the Blue Marlin, we could change it to the Pink Flamingo, and just change the whole thing one time. And don't tell me that impossible, because I used to have an orange $50 bill, and now I got a blue one. Okay, that aside, men like Mr. Rowell have given wonderful service. And the difference between the incident of the Flamingo is the Flamingo was all of about 48 hours. The entire catastrophe from the spotting of the vessels, from the leaving of Inagua, actually, to the spotting of the vessels, to the sinking of the ship, to the flying out of that entire thing is about a 48-hour, at best, 36-hour window. These boys were out to sea for 11 days, nine of which is sailing time with mass uncertainty, low visibility, no hope in sight, and the one great white hope, the U.S. Coast Guard, sailing off into the distance. I mean, just imagine the trauma, right? And you all got some traumatic counseling afterwards.
Yes. When we came back, the Defense Force and the government organized for us to have counseling with Dr. Barrett. So we had to take our wives, your girlfriend, significant other, and we went for counseling. I think we went to him about maybe 3 or 4 times. He told us, like, yeah, whenever you need to, the door's open, just come in. You don't have to worry about no money, no, no. Just come in if you have a problem. Mm-hmm. My problem started the first night we landed in Honduras.
Okay.
My problem started. Now, with Archie and Kerry, their problem may have started later. I don't know.
Okay.
But from that first night to maybe a year or two later, I had some serious issues I was battling with because of the this experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I dealt with all of that with Dr. Barrett, mm-hmm. you know. And then after maybe a year or two, I told the Defense Force, listen, I don't ever want to sail again because of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they honored my wishes, but remember, things happened with emergencies and yeah, mass shortage. I went out to
sea. You became a mop man.
Yes, that's right.
When I met you, you were a running mop man.
Oh, yeah. Running fast mop man.
I remember Sean Roll would run to work. He would put his backpack on and run to work.
I was a part of the military operation platoon, yes. And then we later went into military police and force protection.
Right.
Yeah, and I loved that. Yeah, it was good. So I really did very, very little sailing after the incident.
Someone here is asking me, said, your life was in the people's hand and you asking the man for your weapons back. What made you ask for the guns?
Okay, good question. Well, because, you know, I didn't know what I had to face. I had to face the music when I go back to Coralava.
You were still worrying about what would happen when you get to Coralava?
Seriously, I was worrying about the man weapons. Wow. That's the most experience, the most important, because I know it was important to them.
Yeah.
The important thing is, say, hold on now, we give you this $500 gun and this $1,800 bullets and you come, you know. No, seriously though, I said I wanted to know if the weapons were secure. They were secured.
Okay.
It never touched our hands again.
Mm-hmm.
They went from Honduras, the weapons straight back to Coralaba base. Okay. I'm happy to say, and they never had access to question but where the weapons or whatever, because that was out of our hands. Mm-hmm. The Honduran military dealt with that. The government dealt with it and we didn't have to worry about the weapons. That was at least of our worries, thanks to the powers
under
the people, the people who were officiating everything, who made sure we were okay. But I was worried about it. I did ask the fellas where the government gone. I did ask them. Honestly, I did.
Believe it or not, we are flat out of time. Let me see if I can squeeze 2 text messages in here. One says, good morning, Levin. Great show there, brave man. This one here also says it is good to hear Roel share his experience about the incident. Mm-hmm. Mr. Roel, give us your shout outs before we get out of here.
I just want to say thank you to everybody. My two greatest supporters were my parents. My father passed last November.
Mm-hmm.
God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. My mother's still there listening.
She's such a dear woman. I want to tell you, I know your mommy so well.
Yes.
And I know it's usually older people tell younger people how well they know their parents. But your mommy happened to have been a part of the team at Prince William when I was there.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I was under the tutelage of Miss Rule at some point in my life as well. I know her so well.
Yeah.
She's such a wonderful human being.
Yeah, they counseled me my whole 34 years in the Defense Force and tried to steer me right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say hello to my children, my immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been very supportive. My family, far and near.
Okay.
You know, they've been very, very supportive. And I couldn't make it without them.
Yeah. So anyway, it's Friday. You all know I say it like I do every Friday. Every single Friday, I say the very same thing. Pookie, y'all, I see y'all start that killing again. Mm-hmm. I want y'all to stop that. Before I go, though, BEC, listen, just leave it. I see y'all got industrial action going on. man, not for my sake, for Jesus' sake, please don't cut the light off in South Beach. Like, I can't tell y'all where else to cut the, don't cut it off. But we cool. I with y'all. I on y'all. Matter of fact, nobody else around here could get me to march except for BEC. And BEC, if y'all need me to help y'all march, just let me know. I coming. All I ask is, man, please don't cut the light off South Beach. I need, like, things like air condition and fridge and things like that. So don't, man. Man, please. And I got children, they're young, and my son can't take the heat. All right, so please don't cut the light off in South Beach, okay, BEC? Man, I care about y'all. So show me that y'all care about me. Pookie, y'all stop the killing. The morgue full. We ain't have nowhere to put y'all. Other than that, though, it's Friday. You know I say it like I do every week, every Friday. Do everything in your power to be sure that you don't kill anybody. More important than that, do even more in your power to be sure that nobody don't kill you. And if you do that, I'll see you right back here Monday, because election time has come. I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news, smart talk. Don't move. They've got the news. It's now.